Happy Friday, everybody, and welcome back to another week of Bioactive Live Q&A. I am Mark with MI Beneficials, your host. With me, as always, I have Brian from Rubber Ducky Isopods and Kevin from OK Calyx. And this week, we have a really special guest. This is a guy that's been teaching and showing people, demonstrating how to use effective microorganisms, bokashi, biochar, and compost teas with great success, and a guy that doesn't just teach it, but shows it. Without any further ado, Cuauhtémoc Villa, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me. My name is Cuauhtémoc Villa. I'm from the Taino Aztec Mayan Nation, and I'm coming to you from Portland, Oregon, home of the Chinook people. So glad to be here and share so much knowledge, especially so much of this knowledge comes from indigenous cultures. You know, the EM, the bokashi, this is tribal knowledge from those Asian countries. And every country has some cool shit that we can dig up that we can implement now in this time as we try to rebuild our planet. So thanks for having me today.
Yeah, for sure, Cuauhtémoc. And the thing that I really love about you is that when you list off things like effective microorganisms, bokashi, biochar, they sound kind of complicated, but when you listen to what the way that Cuauhtémoc prepares these things, it's really not that complicated at all. And he's got an amazing collection of videos online. And if you guys haven't seen these, I highly recommend. He also posts on at Bokashi for you on Instagram a lot. So definitely check out those things if you haven't. And the reason that we're here tonight, guys, is to catch up with Cuauhtémoc. We're going to kind of get the basics from him. We only get a 1 hour period with him. But the point of the show is to connect with you guys. We're hoping that you guys have some questions to ask that are burning in your minds that hopefully we can help answer. And hopefully they apply to the topic at hand tonight. So Cuauhtémoc, I guess, if you would, can you run us through your preparation of effective, like where would you start, I guess, in explaining the process of preparing your effective microorganisms?
I follow the label that's on the bottle, traditional fermentation label, and the EM that I'm using. I like both the SCD probiotics EM and Terraganics EM. Those have just been great for me. I learned about EM 22 years ago. So I got to see a change into a lot of different different companies and a lot of different people. But it's the basic one part EM, one part molasses, 20 parts water is going to be my standard. And closed fermentation lid. We're not going to use a bubbler on that thing. That's going to be my standard extending EM and how I've personally been growing it since I first had it 22 years ago. I still got the same original batch.
So when you make your EM, I mean, you've got 20 year old EM, right? The original batch is going to be over 20 years old at this point. If you were somebody starting a new batch of EM, where would you begin?
So I would get a clean container, start small. You don't want to go too big. And I think the more times you practice the fermentation, the more your olfactories become keen to the senses and the time of the development and the expansion of that fermentation. So I usually get me a clean container, grab like a clean gallon container. And I use about 3/4 cup EM, 3/4 cup molasses, and pour that into the container and top it off. Shaking it around, stirring, getting that molasses and sugar all mixed up. The lid has to be tight. You want, because some of those microbes are going to be gassing off oxygen and other ones are going to be gassing off CO2. So if you can close up the container, they're going to supply each other with enough food. Once the molasses runs out, they'll also have gases to eat. Water sometimes is an issue because we know water can kill microorganisms. But with EM, one of the microbes in EM, we have three main microbes in EM. We have yeast, which we know from beer, bread, and wine. That thing can just eat organic matter quickly. So it makes things bioavailable. That's what makes the yeast so good. Then it's lactic acid bacteria. And that microbe is like a clean freak. You know, pickles and olives, and they can sing in that brine without pathogens getting to them. So this keeps pathogens away from our soils and plants as well, since it's such a clean freak. And I think the key one, the key microbe that we got to really start paying attention to is that purple non-sulfur bacteria. You know, he can eat carbohydrates, sugars. He can eat chemotrophic things that are typically super toxic to organisms, things that can kill most microorganisms. It's food for this guy. It can eat gases, CO2. We have high CO2 levels. We, you know, methanes, all these toxic gases is food for purple non-sulfur bacteria. And it's also thermophilic, so it can just be warm. It goes off of heat and phototrophic. So, you know, this is a gangster that's been around a long time on this planet. And when you think about even like how this planet was even born, when you think of just cell biology, you know, that eukaryotic partnership with the bacteria creating the mitochondrial, you know, we don't really look at what is the mitochondrial. It's a bacteria. It's a bacteria that's living inside of a host and exchanging energy for it. And because of that partnership, because these two things were different, but they made partnership, look at all the things that it's done from single cell to multi-cell now. So we got to look at that mitochondrial, that energy producing plant. And since this little bacteria has been around for so long, when this planet was toxic, it was very happy eating methane, living in volcanoes, farting oxygen all the time. And that's what created the swing in the planet so other shit can start to land here. So when we look at that thing and when we have that in the mix, the water, I'm not so worried about all my fermentations, because if that's the water that I'm farming with, or if that's the water in my irrigation, I can't gas off every gallon. I can't filter everything that's going through. So if I can expose the dirty water to my EM in the brew, the EM then gets to know the problem, gets to know the enemy pretty good. And I believe it tweaks the consortia accordingly and just gives it a leg up. So, well, you're right. Some of these waters can kill microorganisms. But you got to think microbes are, they're tough too. They'll bury themselves inside of dead microbes and like a rain jacket and hide, you know, from fires and acidic environments. You know, these things are survivors. So when we think about the water that we use, I like to use clean water, of course, to keep it pure. But if I got to use that water, I'm going to start introducing it during the fermentation state.
And so then you talked about, go on.
2 week fermentation. Once I do the 1 to 1 to 20 and I let that go 2 weeks anaerobic or pH drop below 4.0. Once I hit the 4.0 level, no pathogens can live in that 4.0 brine. So then I'm getting pretty good. 3.5 is how it comes out from the shop. So, you know, that's ideal. That's my basic brew there for the EM extension.
And then where do you get the, so you talked about the three kind of the three pillars, right? The yeast, the labs, the lactobacillus, and then the third one is the purple non-sulfur bacteria. And where does that one come from? I'm sorry if you covered it. I apologize. There was just so much amazing information with what you just said there.
No, you're going to find that sucker in the belly of the worms. You know how worms are to soil. When we start seeing that indicator species, we know he's good. It lives at the edges of ponds and volcanoes, and you can find it in rock sediment where the rivers meet the oceans.
Mm-hmm. So do you actually physically add that into the barrel with the mix, or is that something you get when you release the EM?
It all comes from the shop. The SCD puts it together. EM, this is what they put together. I don't have to do anything to just buy the mother culture and extend. That's how easy it is. I mean, you can grow. You'll see like KNF guys are growing PNSB through eggs. You know, you can extract from eggs. But because I work with a lot of agencies and businesses that just want to buy and try, they've done all the legwork for us. You know, these guys have been doing it forever. So it's always good to like, I always get started with the EM, but to fine tune and really get a good leg up on stuff, the KNF IMO stuff always outperforms in bioremediation projects. But, you know, I got to have a consistent thing happening. So I let the professionals do that, the EM dudes and SCD.
So can you talk about because it's amazing what can be done with that trio right there. And you've talked about your work in bioremediation. I've heard you tell stories about remediating algae issues on canals and stuff like that. How do you use it in your bioremediation? Are you're pouring it straight into waterways? Are you make crafting it into balls? Are you like further processing it from there? Can you go through that?
Yeah. We've done several ways to inoculate a waterway, especially if you're using that water for irrigation. And we can set and create and make a big ferment of EM. You know, I was making 55-gallon drums, sometimes 275-gallon totes at a time. It would be right by the water side. And then I'd be able to drop in 5 to 10 gallons at a time into that waterway. But there's also other inoculations where I'll just set 55-gallon barrels. And I like to use that water I'm going to be cleaning, as I told you. And I can put that right into the barrel just right next to the lake. And I can ferment that thing out. And every 2 weeks go by, dump and create a new, you know, a new barrel. Uh-huh. Just by adding molasses, and then
wow,
those things get stronger. And I mean, the lake that we just did with that way, they used to run electric pumps to oxygenate the water. They didn't have to run electricity this year. You know, it saves a bunch of money, going up 20% this year in Oregon, the electricity prices. We let the microbe do the farting, do the oxygen, and you don't got to run the pumps.
So, and I don't know if people are grasping what he's saying, but it's essentially, it's funny because we had Chris Trump on last week. He was talking about indigenous predatory microorganisms, and it's called EM, but essentially what you're doing is indigenous EM. I mean, you're allowing the EM to acclimate to the indigenous state of the water and allowing it to gear up for the ailments or issues that are happening in that water. So you isolate like a bigger vessel, you allow it to ferment in that, you release, then you refill that vessel, allow it to ferment, release, just because the power that's going on inside of that mm-hmm. smaller, you probably explained it, but like what exactly is all that's going on? Like how is it expelling the issues there?
Okay, so if I were to guess, what we found out, Earth University, if you go to Whole Foods, you can buy bananas from Earth University, a little sticker on there. That's where they first started teaching EM. That's where the first schools were coming out, is out of Earth University. And when they would do the nutrient density on the bananas, organic bananas, their bananas were 20% more nutrient dense, obviously because of the micro relationship. But then they started looking at the microbes in the soil. They wanted to see how much of the original mother culture was spreading throughout the banana farm. And they could not find the EM anywhere. And this was like 15 years of using EM liquid and using Bokashi. They could not find the trio. So everyone's scratching their heads and wondering what the hell happened. Well, what's going on? Well, this is when the understanding, and it makes total sense, is that EM doesn't come to take over an area. It comes to be a catalyst. It's part of the food chain. It gets gobbled up. If you gobble up a PNSB, it's going to probably perform a lot like it did early lifetime when this planet was starting. And going inside of the body of that host of that new microbe, it's going to then supply a lot of energy. I find that it's the IMOs of each area that always outperform everything that we test. You know, USDA does microbial testing. They haven't done EM yet, but a lot of the microbial testing USDA does on bioremediation sites, it's always molasses that outperforms all the microorganisms. So if you just think about what we're just feeding the IMO, the minerals, you know, 40 kinds of vitamins and minerals and molasses. If we can just get the native ones going again, they've just been sick. You know, they've had a hard time. But if they start eating good, just like if you start eating good, if you start exercising in the morning and get your energy up, just like you should, your whole work day is going to be completely different. So that's why giving the microbes minerals, just the molasses, seem to kick ass on everything. Not to mention, you know, with the EM, when we brew them in consortia, they really get to speak to each other, the three colonies, but then you introduce them to that foreign water. then they really, there's some intercellular communication that really happens with microorganisms. And this is like really a big deal, because this kind of conversation that happens, you know, from what we understand is that there's like 5% pathogens. We know the super germs, staph, E. coli. We know 5% are beneficial. You know, we know from fermentation, and they're good for our food, they prepare foods. But what blows the minds of people is there's 90% that are what we call opportunistic. That means they're waiting for an opportunity. Whoever's leading that environment, they're going to follow. So if you have pathogen, if it's in a pathogenic state, that 90% is going to act pathogenic. But if you have beneficial, it only takes a little bit to get the 90% to swing. So it's really a deep catalyst on getting the native dudes to get going in that area, because they know it better than anyone else. They built that spot. And that's all the encouragement that they need. And I think that's why it happens so fast with EM. You got that, their mito now is getting pumped up, you know, and that when it, when our mitos are pumped, the energy levels are up. That's what we get as, that's what we call regenerative, right? Life moves in two directions, either regenerative or degenerative. And that's solely based on the microorganisms that are present.
Truly incredible, because it's lending itself to the native microbes. So it, this essentially means that it's applicable across the board. Would you say that it can be, so like we talk a lot, some episodes we have just bioactive guys on, right? Who are their goal is to run a native environment inside a bioactive enclosure. And, you know, trying to replicate nature to some extent, and in a closed cycle, which I would kind of a closed loop, I would compare that to like living soil, having, you know, an indoor raised bed where you have, you know, obviously you want heavy life in the soil. Is there any negative to running, effective microorganisms in that type of system? Or like, is there something, any caution that you would, exude there?
No, it seemed like it'd be beneficial. If you got a microbe that's farting CO2 and farting oxygen, you know, the oxygen is going to keep your soils from going anaerobic. The plants are going to use CO2 for their fresh air. So it seems like this is how the planet did it. We want to try to mimic what's been successful forever. And, you know, we call that biomimicry. As first people, our universities was not a school, but you watched nature. Everyone, just like, you know, you said you went fishing. Everyone has a spot where we watch nature. And when we watch that dragonfly going over the creek, or you're sitting over that prairie, that's when the shit comes to you. You know, that's when those things come to you. So we don't want to change what works. And those patterns of nature have worked for a long time.
Right. I think I'm sorry, Quatamac. So, do you ever use EM as a foliar, or is it almost always as a soil or a water drench?
No, 100% on the foliar. I feel like if I can get it on the foliage, then it's about competitive exclusion. If I got good guys on that thing, then when bad shit starts to try to land, lactic acid bacteria we just talked about is a clean freak. You know, I'm not going to get the botrytises because I got lactic acids. And when, you know, when my stomatas are open, if I can get this purple non-sulfur bacteria that's phototrophic on top of the leaf, imagine the type of energy you're sending down to your plant besides the sun itself. You know, you're talking about, this is what an area now we're looking at, it's called quantum biology. And this is where we're looking at the quantum energy of plants, the quantum energy of sunlight. You know, we know light energizes plants, but there's a whole other soil biology of quantum that we miss them what that is. So if I have a bacteria that's phototrophic, you damn right I'm going to get that thing on the leaf. You damn right I'm going to get it up in the soil, because I'm enhancing the quantum potential of that plant. And it's about that little microbe wants to teach and wants to partner with things and teach them how to work with light more efficiently. So, you know, that's the whole key of thing. How do we work with light? You know, even our own bodies, how do we work with light? So the more we learn about how light affects our own mitochondrial, the more you'll understand more about health problems. And it has, you know, we're doctoring soil, but we're doctoring ourselves too. The soil and ourselves are inseparable. And then you'll find that discovery and just be so amazed how much you know about health just from what you learned about soil. But the quantum biology is what I want to invite you guys to. So you can start looking at this energy in the soil, this energy that gives us energy of our own cells. And then when we can ramp that up, look out, the plant now works with light differently. You know, I like to call, you can, your plants look like they're doing yoga when they have that. You know, Matt's talked about these microbes going in and out of the plant. What do you think happens when purple non-sulfur bacteria goes into your plant, in through the roots and in through the leaf? That sucker is going to carry light with it. And that light's going to give that plant energy to cell divide quicker, create more carbon rings, which we call that terpenes. So, you know, that's what we want to start looking at. What is the quantum potential of what we're doing?
So we covered EM pretty well. And I think that's probably one of the, that's probably the coolest thing that I've heard you talk about, and something that nobody else holds, has I've heard told in such a light. So I can't wait to use that more in my garden and see where it goes. Cause, unbelievable, truly. So let's talk biochar. Kev, I'll kind of hand it over to you here after this one, but can you take us through the importance of biochar? Maybe we can get into a little bit of making it, but maybe just the importance of biochar and how it goes together in the mix and you're in the Quatamac special sauce.
Hey, I feel like carbon, you know, if we look at, once again, I always look at how life evolved on this planet. And when life started to come, we had to have water and we have to have carbon. Water and carbon are the driving forces for things to grow. And I think as we grow, we think we that plant's growing, but as growers, we never think about putting energy back into that soil, you know, and the compost is a form of energy through the microorganisms, but the char itself, what's happening with biochar and the amount of energy that it holds, we're missing the boat on that, but we didn't at first because I got sucked into biochar because I was in cannabis and we were the only ones at that time using biochar. So the ecology center came knocking on the door, said, how are you guys using it? What are you doing? But biochar having that carbon electrical influence, it's able to give energy to that plant. And once again, energy, just like the mitochondrial, this purple non-sulfur bacteria, he can get receive energy, and that's as his food, and give, you know, it gives off energy. So now we know about these electron loving microbes, you know, they're like Jedis. You can see where the char is like charging, keeping that battery charged, keeping that soil battery charged all the time. And not only that, it's carbon. So just like your phone is silica carbon, carbon can hold information. Information's held on carbon. So we have to understand that there's data held on that carbon when it burns. We know the forest, every time it burns, it grows healthier, more resilient, more diverse. But that's because if that plant's growing and it needs information on who's its friend or foe, it can go to its carbon and look it up. And it's stored in that carbon of the biochar. So this is what's cool for like cannabis as we're breeding our plants, keeping that carbon skeleton of its parents. It's going to have data for the seed's next succession that it's going to use at the quantum biology level. And this is what's super important, is keeping that energy level up in the soil. And that's what I think char is best for. Not to mention water holding capacity, nutrients, home for microbiology. I mean, these are just, you know, the basics. I'm going down to the quantum fields, but all these tied together. Even with semiconductors in cars, they're going to start making all this stuff with biochar. You know, these guys were coming to meetings 10 years ago, but now they're looking for cheap sources of making semiconductors and batteries and graphene. I don't know if you know about graphite, charcoal graphene, but graphene can push energy in two directions super strong. We can do this. EM does the same thing when you cool down your fires with the char. So, you know, we're learning that charcoal is being used to raise the state of the soil to levels that haven't been seen outside of thermal fusion, according to MIT. So, you know, we got to start to listen up. Mm-hmm. But yeah, first people, we always ran fire all the time. That was always part of our gardening practices. So,
well, and you said, you mentioned it when, while Kevin gets back on here, just real quick, you mentioned the slash and burn kind of like your indigenous people, and they would out of necessity to run, essentially, they would slash, burn, run. I mean, it's been something that's been going on and for a long, long time. That's just kind of coming back into the light now. And it's amazing that you're connecting that with your heritage in such a way. Kev, you got questions?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm at a football game. Hope I got a pretty good connection. You can get my whole question. Because when you, Guatemala, I've heard you talk about how carbon has DNA, in, or sorry, how carbon has data in its memory, and how plants that are grown in material that has been broken down and biocharred or IMO3 or whatever and reused in the same spot and growing the same plants again is beneficial because of memory. And so it's really a philosophical idea if you don't like kind of narrow down, like what are we talking about exactly? And my questions are, is the data or the memory you're talking about in carbon, is it like how the shape of the carbon is, you know, with the beehive shapes, can it understand like, oh, a certain type of micro would have lived in this section? Or does the carbon look like it had a lot of water stored in it? You know, what is the data that plants are reading if I'm getting my question across?
No, I feel 100%. And it's the same kind of data storage replication that we're doing, as I was trying to mention, with computers. You know, our electronic systems can tap into an area and pull up a screen, and they can do different functions. So there's data stored in the carbon of the biochar that the plant can access. It's not so much who lived here, but everything about that location, weather. As that plant and tree grow, it collects data about the whole environment all the time, 24/7. That gets stored into the tissue, then making it permanent is how we end up with the charcoal. So accessing it, I think, is your question. And accessing it is done through those electrical components that we're just learning about through quantum biology. And this is where, just how do you get information when you sit in the sun in a sunny day and start to think, right? I mean, beautiful downloads start coming to you about what to do next. What's that threading connection, right? But I mean, golly, who can put a finger on that? But it's coming to you in the sunlight. It's coming to you. That's the same way it works through the soil. It's dispelling energy and connections electronically, which then manifests physically as mycelium and structure. But it all that is just influenced by some sort of electrical unseen current first.
I could see that with like the idea of a tree and its rings. When you cut it open, it's telling you things about the environment, right? When the rings are further apart, is a wetter year. When they're closer together, it was a drier year. And that's the best I can pick. Try to get a picture on this idea, because I really like it. Because the whole point of natural farming is to recycle and loop things. And it's totally okay to cut down that crop that was there, let it chop and drop, and grow the same crop there again. And again, with the Jadam idea of cannabis has what cannabis needs, you know, you can make JLF out of your cannabis. You can make Bokashi out of your cannabis skeletons and use it all back in the same spot you grew. And if that stuff is loaded, and like you're saying, there's data in the biochar, in the formation of the plant itself. And I like that idea. But, you know, Quadmog, I've heard you talk, you refer to your work in a healthy, a mental healthy way also. Like, man, doing this benefits you as a human. And, you know, it's like when you eat good stuff, your body starts to recognize, okay, we're getting good stuff. Let's act appropriately. But if you're getting bad stuff, your body starts to act. And it shows, too. So it's like we store data in us also. It's like you look at our bones, they can tell if you were malnourished, you know, they can tell the type of life you live. So that's a really good angle at coming at this organics. I really enjoy. And yeah, thanks for introducing this idea, because I love it, man. I appreciate it.
No, and likewise, now I'm starting to think about, like, because of the endophytic microbes, maybe when they pop inside the body and we get the holes, maybe they're like the perfect size of whoever's living inside of that plant. you know, so that got me thinking about like what is exactly happening. And now this new area I just stumbled upon recently called pyroaerobiology. This is the study of microorganisms and smoke. Lets you really think about how much there's tons of microbes, bacteria, and fungi that live through very hot forest fires, and they collect them up in the smoke. But it makes me wonder, like, dude, maybe what you just said, the body size inside the wood would make it more appropriate for each of the little boogers that seem to be partnering with that thing. So thank you for that.
And so when you make biochar, the idea is that you erase the memory as much as you can. Is that right? And then you want to implant new memory, as in the biology or nutrients or whatever, however you activate it.
Yeah, but you got to get to like 2,000 degrees to completely erase all the data. So when we're making biochar, we're at 2,000 C you have to get to. But, you know, even in a nice kiln, Doug, we're only 600, 800, 900 C's. So it seems like it has half of the memory, but then it has the other half now going to be of regenerative microorganism communities.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So another biochar question, I think that'll be beneficial for me for sure and for our listening audience, because we have a lot of guys out there that will hear this and will go just try it. And they'll see how it goes for them. So my question to you is, in the spirit of Jadam, ultra low cost, you're using what's around you and trying not to spend a bunch of money on anything. What is an ultra low cost of making biochar in my backyard? The picture would be a guy with about an acre who's got a nice little garden, got some area, you know, got some nut trees and all that. What could I scrape those branches up and burn them somehow in my backyard to get me maybe a low grade biochar or maybe even a good grade biochar?
Yeah. So if you stacked your traditional burn piles, you know, everybody can rock a 4x4x4 and stack it next to your wood, try to get it kind of in a conical shape. The wood laying flat is harder to burn than up at an angle. So getting that wood up at an angle in a nice conical shape. But when you light your fire, light it at the top, not at the bottom. And at the top of that little 4x4, put smaller sticks like a bird's nest. But once that little bird's nest starts to combust, it's going to release the volatile gases from the biomass below as it heats. And then the gases will feed right into the flame front as well as the smoke. And, you know, we don't realize smoke is actually fuel. But if we can capture all that smoke on a toplet fire, then that toplet fire is going to get really big from the heating up biomass down below and the smoke trying to escape, that can ramp up our temps nice, you know, 700-800 C's. That just let that top down, let it burn down now. And then when you get to the point where just the cover, you're starting to get white ash on the top, you can quench your fire and capture the CO2 there. But, you know, quench it with your compost teas, quench it with all your beautiful solutions, and lock up that carbon. But doing the toplet, we call it conservation burn, if you're to look it up. And conservation burn, we just did testing with the U.S. Forest Service. They've never done emissions testing on even a burn pile. But we're telling them, if you do toplet stuff, can we do on no burn days, you know, in California? So they did the emissions testing now, because now all the smoke, we, you know, 89% is what we calculated, is now being caught in combustion. And all the things that are usually bad is being caught in combustion, driving my heat. And then I'm quenching to capture the carbon. So we're trying to get this as standard operating practices for land management and farms. So conservation burn is your deal.
Mm-hmm. Hey, when you're saying real quick, when you're saying SOPs with biochar, I've heard a lot of people say that if it doesn't drop like glass, that it's not first class or whatever the little like mantra was. Mm-hmm. Do you agree to that? Like if it doesn't sound like glass when you're dropping it, it's not the proper first class biochar correctly made.
Yeah, the glassier it is, the carbon content you're going to have. But biochar, it depends what you're doing with it for different things. You may not need a 83% biochar. We like that 83% when we're doing stormwater management, when we need to hold and capture a lot of nasty chemicals. That stuff is super sticky. The higher content, the glassier, the more stickier it is, the more magnetic it is. But plants like cannabis, they actually like a little bit volatiles left behind, a little bit lower grade char, and they use all those compounds. So acetic plants, seemed to like biochar that's not quite all the way done. So, you know, it depends what you're doing it for. So, yeah, I don't want the cannabis char for stormwater management, but for, you know, for cannabis growing, I do.
So whenever you make biochar at home, I think often people think you only use wood, but listening to you on Shaping Fire with Shangalos, you got to talking about how you like actually blueberry plants, if that is right, to make biochar. Is that correct?
It was blackberry.
Why? Blackberry. And why?
If you ever broke the inside of blackberry, you'll see like a, it's like a corky white cushiony inside. So when that charcoals up, it just micronizes so nicely. So a lot of times in cannabis, people aren't using biochar, but if I can have a good micronized cannabis or biochar, then I could just top dress that, let that percolate down in the soil. The plants are going to lift from that charge in a couple, you know, 2 or 3 days. But I can get that little micronized stuff down deeper in existing grows. So that's why I like to use that. And yeah, everything carbonized has a cool structure, and there's something about each thing, you know, so it's cool to kind of burn and see, especially if it's invasive. It's permaculture. The problem's always the solution. So you realize, oh my God, I don't have enough blackberry now because the char is so damn good. You want to use it in all your garden.
That's awesome.
That was a good tip though, because you're talking about before about how when you first started making biochar, you're kind of wanting maybe larger, more even pieces. And then, when you first started making, you want it powdered up pretty well. And then you started saying, oh, the bigger pieces, or maybe the mixed pieces are kind of a better idea. But those small fine grain, you say, gets down a little bit lower, falls down into the holes a little better probably.
It does. Good. Yeah. And even some people's drip, if it's really powdery, you can throw them into the drips. You know, it depends on your, you know, your sprayers and stuff. But you can run them through the drips. It picks up people's salts. But then you can just get it right in there. So it's like char has so many different ways we can use a thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, man, we are definitely going to have a part two with you if you ever have time. But we should get into some community questions, because I know there's a lot of questions coming in.
Heck yeah.
Brian, you want to flip them over?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, man, we appreciate your time. We've seen you around, man. You've been on all the kind of important podcasts, or ones that I think a lot of people recognize. So for our audience, you're probably going to be new to them, to be honest. And we're excited to kind of expose a lot of these people that are, from a scientific point of view, I would say people kind of rear back with some of the stuff that you say. But like I was joking with before, I think if you're into mushrooms and DMT and start to see the world in a different space, then it allows your mind to open up to what is that quantum world. And there's a lot of bright-minded people that can explain it a lot better than even the four of us sitting here. So when you're trying to understand the microbial world, I think that's where it's this is the new frontier, man. This is some of the stuff that I think in time people are going to go back and watch these videos. So I appreciate you kind of just sitting here and shooting the shit with your, you know, off the cuff kind of stuff is very hard for a lot of people. And like Mark had said at the beginning, man, you're very articulate with the way that you answer complex questions. So we have our first question, Machiavelli Gaming. That's for Kevin. And Kevin just fell off. He's having trouble, man. He lives in kind of the sticks, and then when you play football, it's out there sometimes.
Okay.
There he is. Oh. Hey, Kevin, while we got you here, let me throw this one to you real quick.
I saw that question. I saw that question, read it already. I don't run at that type of scale, man. So, Machiavelli, I don't have a great idea. But if you just go a 1 to 10 solution, if you can figure that out, you don't need a lot of seawater at all. But I'd go a 1 to 10 ratio. So if you can figure that one out, go there.
And I would say that was in the early days too. That was one of the things that Leighton Morrison would talk about, being a moron, meaning you're adding moron and moron. Is that people were morons with the sea kelps and the sea waters and the sea minerals and the C90 or whatever that one product was called. So yeah, just be real hesitant on thinking that more minerals always mean success. Mark was wanting to know about the hose. I'm just kidding. How do I make them at home? I think he was talking more about the EM1s when you first started, sir.
Yeah, you kind of already answered this one back at the beginning of the episode.
I think a lot of people will call labs and molasses mixed together EM. And really, you should call it shelf-stable labs, because EM1 is really a registered trademark name that, you know, it's his own brand. Like, really, you've heard the three pillars of it. But often, we natural farmers will call our labs mixed with molasses EM, and that's just kind of what you'll call it. So it doesn't mean that's what it is.
All right, this one's actually my question, one of my questions. Is RO water considered clean water or lifeless water, in your opinion, when you're coming more from like the quantum world? So when you strip everything of it, is there value in that when you're talking about on a deeper level or quantum level, crystal level, like Dr. Emoto's work?
No, we stripped it, dog. We stripped it. We took out everything. Yeah, and that's kind of, you know, our science, American mind. That's how we want to always break things down to the smallest part as that we can. But we need those other components in there, you know, unless you got like water from Detroit or something, you know, with PFAS or something. But RO is, I feel like we waste so much resources doing the RO water.
Yeah, man, it's so wasteful. The only time I feel like it's only worth it to me is when I wash my black truck, because the RO water doesn't leave any of those fucking marks, man. All right, so from David Graff, do you like to add anything additional to your bokashi after it's fermented?
No, I added during ferment so it can break it down during the fermentation. So if I add 10% of whatever I'm going to be using, I can make a bokashi for veg. So I'm going to add my kelps in there. I'm going to add my fish. I go up about 10% of my mix, but if I can ride that through the fermentation, it's go time when I put that thing on the soil. I don't got to wait for it to break down. So add in your goodies at 10%. You know, if I'm going to do a bloom, I'm going to throw in my baguanos and then add that 10%. And I use way less. So you can really expand your materials and save a lot of money by fermenting it first and then using it.
I think what a lot of natural farmers think of bokashi is when we make fermented wheat bran and maybe add a little rice hulls to it. Because that's typically like when you type into Amazon, I want to buy some bokashi, it's going to bring up that style of bokashi. But I think what Quatamuck does is, as far as I've seen you, is you bokashi everything. Because bokashi is just a process of fermenting organic materials, you know, down into organic matter eventually. But you can use basically any organic material to make bokashi with. Save everything. You know, you see me make bokashi out of the cannabis skeletons, out of coffee grounds, out of the wheat bran, you know, all kinds of things. So you can bokashi anything. And here's the point. If you save all that cannabis stalks and or even your tomato plants and all that, put them in lactic acid bacteria for a little bit. And just let them get broken down and then throw them back on your garden. They're just a more healthy green manure now. And, you know, they got the addition of microbes. You could put any microbes in that bucket, really. But that's kind of the idea of breaking something down using microbes. You're just fermenting it down. So you can use anything. And you watch his videos, you'll see him ferment anything down. He does a lot.
Yeah, bokashi just means fermented organic matter in Japanese. So you could use any kind of fermentation. But the difference is, like I said, with ours, we use the EM, which has that purple non-sulfur bacteria, which I feel like is the catalyst for the whole party. So that's the difference there.
Our next question is from Rick, and it sounds like Rick is starting to have his soil become alive and thriving because he's talking about the purple sheen. So if you order worms from usually like Uncle Jim or something like that, those aren't going to be purple. Those are going to probably almost look lifeless. And so it's your goal to kind of take that and improve on that. So with Rick, it's fun to see some of the, I don't know if you want to call you a student, but like somebody that's really into this. Rick, he's here every week, Quatamox. So there's it's something cool to see when people starting to ask the questions that you know come down the pipeline. So when worms get that purple sheen, is that the abundance of that organism? Purple what?
Dude, I think that's the homie. I think that's PNSB. I don't know. It'd be fun to see that. That's one of the cool, I think, Matt, it's hard to get a microscope shot of that thing. It's so little. But it, I think that's what you got on there. If, especially if that thing's rocking and popping, then you know it's probably living there.
And I think in the early days, that's what we were discovering without having your mindset and background. So we were just telling everybody, yo, the red wiggler is something special in the rhizosphere. And then we were using the night crawlers to kind of really build up the dissolved oxygen channels, not have to use like expensive perlite. That was really what the early days, what everybody was saying to use. So there's a lot of fun when you start to understand Mother Nature at that level. Stefan wants to know, happy Friday. Happy Friday to you as well. Can you touch on Super Sera powder? And I thought this was interesting because I never heard of that.
Yeah, that's what really got me into biochar is because I was in EM first, and they make this powder, you guys. It's silica. It's carbon. They fire it at 2,000 degrees, and when it's in flux, they cool it down with EM and EM gold. This powder then maintains a resonance on the electromagnetic spectrum that's known as far infrared. Far infrared is the part of the spectrum that gets cells to divide and is a key player of swinging mitochondrial into function. So one day, my sister's boyfriend, who taught me about EM, he brought the powder, poured two glasses of wine, and he put the powder just next to one of the glasses. And you just got to hold it next to the glass, yo, for 30 seconds, a two-buck chuck, and taste both those glasses. The Super Sera powder electromagnetic resonance is the exact wavelength as the molecules in the wine glass. So when you would taste that wine that wasn't restructured, you would have your bitter from the fruit, the alcohol is hot, and then some really sharp tannins. But when you spin it, in physics it's called spin, you take those molecules so fast at the speed of light and they break their bond, it's like sandpaper on that fucking wine. So this wine became so smooth, that's what opened the door to me. Like, what just happened here, dude? I don't know anything that can do something like that. So we try, you know, you can do it on bitter coffee. It's going to smooth the tannins out because electromagnetic resonance is going to hit the molecules and create in physics called spin, gets things to mix up. So that's what the Super Sera powder, when the EM company made that, it was really to give energy to the microbes during fermentation. We would add a little bit of this into our powders, and this would supply the energy to the consortia for it to ramp up at its highest peak. Now, this whole technology, they've expanded it and they're making graviton charcoal, but it's because I heard how they made Super Sera powder when I saw the biochar conference and them cooling charcoal, which is carbon. That's when it hit me, like, I'm going to make my carbon like they do Super Sera powder. You know, I don't have silica, but my carbon is wood, biomass, but I apply the same things as they do to make Super Sera powder. And that's adding these beneficial fungi bacteria in large amounts at the cooling process. So it freezes it and coats that material, that it's far infrared is the resonance that we're kind of missing from our field of soil study. Because, you know, that's where we can tell how fast are these things brewing, what's happening. And when we look at the brews that I've had for so long going and then we use Super Sera, you can get EM from the manufacturer and you slide that thing. And it's super cool because you see the dot rods at about 20% coverage down on the bottom of that screen. And the little dots are banging the rods, secreting sugar. But when we slide the old EM, you'll find the complete slide is filled with dot rod, not a space gap, irregular, but no one's touching each other. The microbes are in this suspended state, just doing this bong, bing, bong, bing. So there's something happening electromagnetically that we're missing, but it's the influence and the regenerative force that is similar to the sunlight to the planet, But this is what's happening at that far red wavelength. So there's some magic going on there. So yeah, that's what the super serum powder is. What's cool too, I painted like my walls in the house. You can add a little bit in your paint. So I can just like bang a glass of wine out. Uh-huh. We did like cultured marble for the showers. You could throw when they culture your marble, just 5% swings the rest of the marble, and you could just sit in far infrared. We know that these negative ions, if we know them by waterfalls, we know them from the beaches, but it's creating a shit ton of negative ions. This is why I want to see like this powder. We can start throwing this in. Dr. Higa makes glass out of it. So think about us in the light bulb industry as we're moving more towards blue light, which slows mitochondrial, adding in super serum powder to the glass will increase the red, far infrared light, increasing the mitochondrial activity. All the bulbs already got crystals. They already got glass. Even if they want to use LED, as long as the glass is fired with CeraC powder, you can see where now they can engineer a wavelength to the lighting that we just fucking missed. You know, and if this can do this to a glass of wine, what do you think happens to your plants under a lit system under this kind of wavelength? So you don't have to plug this thing in. You know, super serum powder always has its charge. You don't plug it in, there's nothing you do, but you get far infrared therapy. You can put that on your body, things that are hurt, and you're getting this far infrared and straight into your body. So it's like taking in light. It's really the coolest thing. We'd paint fishing lures with it, dog. You'll like this one to try to increase the, because when my bass lures are sitting there, you know, I'm plugging them across, when they're sitting still, the water displacement from the electromagnetic field is like a heartbeat, and those fish can feel, oh shit, wham. And they're able to detect not just through visual, but through water displacement technology. So we would paint our bass lures with them. I got this bracelet from EM. I would pop the little beads off and throw them on my spinner baits and just crush them. So, you know, we're trying to get those things on. So it's limitless what you can do with that powder. If you like EM, you're going to go down a rabbit hole with the powder.
Happy All Dirt right. Dude's got another project coming up.
Half these guys are probably going to run home. All right, Yellow Skunk Farms. Shout out to him. He's been on the show before. We're having him back in a couple of weeks as well. When you use molasses, should you put it in hot water before you use it? And before that, I just wanted to add my... Are you still on the train of it has to be unsulfured black strap molasses?
Nah, it could be both. I'm not a big pusher on any of them. I go for organic, but even I've done conventional, dude. You know, I mean, the microbes have to face shit out there. I can't baby them the whole fucking way and then send them out to this crude world and expect them to do all this bioremediation. So there's certain times for certain things. Hot water. A lot of people like to use hot water to loosen up that molasses. I like to just let them shake every once in a while. So, you know, everyone's different and it's a matter of time. I can't do hot water out in the field. You know, we can't prep water that way, but I found success both ways. I guess if I always had access to that kind of thing, I would probably warm my water up, but we're in the trenches. You can't always do that kind of thing. You're collecting water from different places. But I guess ideally that's probably a good thing.
Mm-hmm. All right, another dirt dork that we see every week here. Shout out to Lisa. Where can I get the bio ceramic powder for the EM recipe in Matt's book of yours?
And that's that's that Sarah powder that you just answered on, right?
Yeah, Terraganics. Terraganics.com and SCD Probiotics both carry amazing ceramic powders. And they come not only in powders, you can get the big ring stones, you know, you can so many different sizes of ceramics now. So you can add them right in line to your house pipe, you know, right where the water comes in. So they got some cool stuff happening in the ceramic side.
I think a lot of people are having some issues with their soil. Rick, this is from David. Rick asked last week about toxic soil. I'd also like to ask about possible ways of removing viroids from your soil.
Yeah, toxicity, anytime, just like a person, if they were sick, they're going to make you drink some charcoal. You know, that charcoal in the soil does grab a lot of toxins so it doesn't go into the host plants. And using the competitive exclusion principle, adding in the microbes that are known to swing pathogens and opportunistic microbes into a regenerative pathway, you know, teaming that with, you know, the microbes in the char, that's really my go-to, man. That's what I'll do as a practitioner. You could make different teas from different plants, but those two for sure should get you to where you need to be.
You kind of had a little thought. He was saying he looks for hardwood when making the biochar, but is any wood okay to char?
Every wood is amazing to char. Every kind of woods. The oak woods are super hardwoods. You know, they burn nice and hot. You get a good dense char from those. But I've never found something where I'm like, oh, I'm not going to burn that again. Everything has a very unique characteristics and a way for me to apply in my field.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like you explained about using like blackberry bushes or blueberry bushes, I mean, just creates more smaller particles to work themselves down in. So anything's fair game. I love it. And it lends itself to using what you have, making it native to your land, you know, and your environment.
Yep.
There's something very powerful about blackberry specifically with microbes, and you see it even in like people that have issues with their stomach and that kind of stuff, that the kefir and the blackberry, that's usually the formula for people that are more like holistic style of thinking instead of reaching for some kind of product off the shelf. So I would say play around with that. I've personally used that. I used to have this thing called leaky gut. You can Google that if you want to. But I healed myself using blackberries and kefir. And once you're healed, then I just keep up with the kefir. So there's something to blackberries specifically. And I think if you want to play around that with your plants, that's where my mind would head with biochar, blackberries, labs, kefir, all that kind of stuff we've been talking about these last few weeks.
No, FPJs. So you make those FPJs with the blackberries. And then they, man, because they grow so vigorous, you know, they're so full of life. So you get that in your sauce. It transfers over to your plants pretty quickly.
Grapinator, could there be any different benefits to making biochar with driftwood compared to other woods that haven't been soaked in wood?
Good question.
When you make biochar, you want your wood to be at least 25% moisture content. I mean, at the most 25% moisture content. If your woods are too wet, they're just going to smoke on you. They're not going to combust. So good dry wood is definitely the key. That's not to say I can't burn 35 and 45%, but I got to have a bunch of 15s and 20s too to get that fire going. So I would only use the driftwood if you have dry biomass to go with it. Otherwise, you're going to create too much smoke. The point of doing the conservation burn is so we don't pollute the environment. You don't want to make char that is have negative effects on the environment. So always keeping good dry wood and a top lid will capture all that smoke and avoid having the problems.
And it pushes the smoke down into the soil, right? When you make the pile correct. And I think I heard you say something on that the ground can actually capture the carbon from that smoke in one way or another. Maybe by theory, but it helps to dissipate that. So when you talk about it being adopted or acceptable from like an EPA standpoint in California, like that's the most stringent, especially when it comes to air quality. They have fire issues to begin with. Mm-hmm. That's a testament to the efficacy of the top burn, like you explained. And there's guys asking like how to make char in the comments and stuff. You got to go do yourself a huge favor and search his name on Google, and you'll get some amazing videos of all that stuff where he really goes in depth, because it's something that you can't really cover in this. We can't really cover it wholly like you do in those 30-minute videos. So
Shaping Fires podcast, man, it's a good one. Shaping Fire with Shane Galos. It was a really good podcast, man.
Thank you.
Next question from Lisa. She wanted you to talk about the do-it-yourself Terra Prada compost pit.
Okay. So traditionally, when we do the bokashi, we're using it to trap food waste. You can take food waste down a fermentation pathway rather than a thermophilic pathway and have access to that material much quicker while maintaining all of the nutrients, because it's in a closed fermentation environment. We're not losing nutrients to gas off like in a thermophilic process. So when we take our food waste through fermentation, then I can open up the ground, bury that under the ground about 15 inches, put my soil back, and within 2 weeks plant on top of that material. This allows me to ferment 2 weeks, sit in the ground 2 weeks, and then pretty much be planting right on top of that plant, which is unachievable through traditional compost style of farming. And in a place where we throw away half of our food and we're scratching to produce local food, you can see we're now thinking about the fermentation pathway to take our waste material, can also provide, you're making a row at the same time. So, you're making your rows from waste material that you're not going to have to go back and fertilize, that have all the water holding capacity that you need. This is how, you create a food system that's localized. So that's one way we refer to as the terra preta pits. And then we also are just digging a hole when we make biochar. If you dig yourself a hole and taper off the sides at an angle at 45 degree, you can make yourself a nice little kiln in the ground, especially if you got large amounts of biomass. That way you can process a lot all the time. So when we make the kiln in the ground, it depends on how much biomass material you have consistently, but then just taper those corners at a 45, and it makes really nice char that cooks for a good time. And as you're adding material on top, it's suffocating down the biomass below, so oxygen isn't hitting it, and you're not going to lose that to oxidation and turn to ash. So you capture a lot more carbon by less oxygen present to the biomass. So that would be another form of terra preta pits that we use to make biochar.
Mm-hmm. Carbon is the dollar bills, y'all. All right. From Jim, how much biochar would you suggest using in worm and insect bins like isopods? They seem to love it.
Go small. So you want to go probably about, let's say, I'm usually adding in the bokashi with my food waste. So, if you're sprinkling just a little bokashi with your food waste before you take it to the wormies, that seems to be enough to get it going. But if you're going to add in bokashi, just do like a cup at a time to your bin and stir that thing around, because every 20 minutes it's going to divide and get going. But it should start taking you down more of a fermentation breakdown.
And he wants to know about biochar.
Oh, biochar to the bins. Okay, I thought it was a pile. Okay.
Stone. Yeah, no problem.
No, biochar, you're gonna add 10% to your worm bins for biochar.
And I would say for my personal use, I would use the bigger pieces. They love the bigger pieces, and the springtails love the smaller pieces.
Nice.
Mark, do you have anything to add to that? You're in that world.
The soil that I use for rearing springtails has charcoal in it. So they love it. That's for whatever reason, they always hang out around it. And it's like, there's some connection there, probably with what's going on beneath the eye,
Everybody's rich. Yeah. Everybody wants to hang out, go to the clubs.
Hey, Quatermug, how close am I to biochar when I burn my fire pit in my backyard, not intentionally to make biochar, but maybe to cook hot dogs or s'mores? And whenever I blow that white ash away, I see those little chunks of black pieces. Is that close to biochar? Would you consider that biochar? Should that charcoal? Is there a difference between the two?
Yeah, charcoal is going to have volatiles left behind so you can cook off of it. So it's made at a lower temperature. Biochar is going to be at a higher temperature, so the volatiles have gassed off, leaving the big holes behind. So it's a temperature difference. And sometimes if you just let the fire go out, you do end up with some char, but you know, it's give or take on the quality. It's when you get the temperature up at a high point and then quench that thing where you really end up with the good char. The water and the steam and all of that really open up the carbon. So
and so maybe like Brian referred to earlier, the sound of it, does that kind of tell you if you're a little closer to biochar, if it's got that clink sound as opposed to a thud?
Yeah, it should be kind of glassy. And then when you handle it, there should be very little black residuals on your fingers from handling it. If you got your fingers are super black, that means there's a lot of volatile still in that char.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, we appreciate your time. We got two more questions, and then sir, you could. I saw you had a little baby back there before we jumped on. So, if there's anybody that understands that right now, sir, it would be me. Stone Mason, how do you use Bokashi pre-compost? The rogue beetles love my soil factory for Bokashi, especially the fermented avocado seeds.
Yeah, so I'm using it in my compost bin. It just adds sprinkling it in every time.
He's not pre-composting. He's using it in the compost.
Yeah. In the compost. It's helping break down his compost. The Bokashi added.
It's a catalyst. Like if you ever go see like a high-end garden center, they have compost starters and stuff like that that are $30, $40. So, you know, he's just teaching you how Mother Nature does it. It's a lot cheaper and better when you start to realize that Mother Nature figured this out a long time ago. And man is just trying to figure out how to sell you basically the same thing in some kind of chemical form and make you pay for it and then somehow patent. So that nobody else can steal from Mother Nature. All right, last one, sir. Oh, yeah.
I was just going to say, if you think about like the way we used to store food back in the day where we fermented everything, we would have already got all that stuff in the compost piles because most of our food we would have taken through fermentation. It's only now that fermentation is absent from our diet, other than the occasional kombucha, that you know we don't prep our foods no more. So that's why now we have to add in the labs. But before it would just, you just eat. They just eat and all that would go in the compost pile. You would end up with it.
The Shire Shaman has graced us tonight. Do you find homemade labs are better for your living soil because of bacteria trapped in your environment is better for, quotations, your soil?
Do I find homemade labs? I feel like they're both good, you know, and it depends on the practitioner who's making them. The microbes respond. They're like little pets. They pick up on the vibe. If you're raising your little wee beasties so that you can be fancy and do a touchdown dance in front of your friends, they're not going to perform the way the little humble girl who been making her little ferments quietly. You didn't even know she did ferments. And she's got all these little brews going, but she don't tell nobody or, you know, but just has straight love for the microorganism. They perform, it sounds goofy, but according to their masters. You know, I think that's why, as we get, especially in cannabis, everyone does the touchdown dance too early. They think they found the next thing and they start to do the touchdown dance. And it's like, we really don't know shit. And if we can get in the position where we're learning it in collective, then we can really unfold the thing. But it's not about doing the dance early, you know, and I think once we think we've learned it and this is it right here, we miss those sides of that part. So the labs respond to whoever's brewing them. They're both great, homemade. Of course, I love the homemade thing. Anything homemade is better, especially when it has a good story to it and the collection, the way it's nurtured. Man, those things are ready to go to work. So homemade, always best.
And when you are messing around with homemade labs, just remember that a little goes a long way. Like you don't want to be, again, a moron and put a bunch on there and potentially just ruin everything because it's a powerful world that you're starting to play around with. So it's a mighty sword, and that mighty sword needs to be usually just at your hip. And that was the last question. So if you want to kind of just promote what you're on to, sir, especially for the rest of the year, man, like I said, you're on a very short list of these very high-end, predominant podcasts. So I hope that people will continue, like Kevin had mentioned and Mark had mentioned, to go down the rabbit hole there's no need to ask some of those questions, like Mark was saying, when that material has already been discussed, addressed, and is in kind of pitched, if you will, in a very alluring way. I've seen some of your stuff, and there's just so much out there that it'd be hard to actually catch up. So for you guys that really love to go down the rabbit hole each and every week, this is going to be a fun one for you. So what are you on for the rest of the year, sir?
So what I think is important, because as you know, I've been in cannabis since 97. This is where I learned how to do everything that we did. Finding ways, as we learn now, to connect back to the indigenous cultures where this all comes from. The Bokashi, the EM, the biochar. As we move forward and we make a living from this technology that comes from a culture, we should, as businesses and as community members, try to improve the first people of the area where we live, because everybody has some gift for the planet. And if we're making a living from these practices, how do we give back to that? And you'll find you'll get more than you've ever hoped to get by opening that door. I think that's been the biggest hiccup and why you haven't heard me in cannabis. You know, how many indigenous people do you get involved in the talks for cannabis? You know, that plant is an indigenous plant. You know, when we look at the culture of cannabis, that was raised by cultures, everyone's cultures. But we exclude traditional knowledge from areas like we now know that mean something. You know, we always say that things went first spiritual, then into the science realm, and now it's coming back into the spiritual realm. And this is like, as we get into quantum mechanics and quantum biology, you'll see that these threads are made to improve ourselves, because we're here to not only improve our land, but the people of the land. The people where we lived really took care of the home that we all live in. And we called it a wilderness, but it was a food forest. There was medicines, there was foods everywhere. It was maintained by fire. The waters were clean. So if we're regenerative community, we should reach back and help the disenfranchised community and share our gift with them and tell them thank you. And I feel like that's what we're coming to now. You know, I just led the U.S. Forest Service on the emissions testing, where I was allowed to do all my indigenous traditions for the fire. The fire is an indigenous tool, and respecting it that way really just opens up your mind to how much knowledge comes from being around the fire, how much knowledge comes from being around the soil. And you realize we really are all connected. We really are all here to make this planet a better place. We are the hands, the thumbs for that job. And there's no exclusion for that to be done. So it's an honor to be able to speak to community where this is where I come from. I am a cannabis grower. I've ventured off to teach the kids because my community turned and did the touchdown dance too early. I'm from California in the hills, where it all come from. Okay. And look how things worked out for the community there. So let's be a little humble, I think, as we work with these sacred plants. The Mayans would call cannabis a plant of the higher order. There's four plants all indigenous people use: tobacco, sage, cedar, sweetgrass. So there's so many plants, and we're fortunate enough to work with one of the ones of the highest order. And it's given us so much, you guys. That plant's given us so much knowledge, so much peace in our life. So I think we owe that back to our local communities and try to share that love and be out of our comfort zone. You think I was comfortable going into agency meetings, pure pothead, garage blasted out, going to teach in schools? I'm on blast in my garage. No, you know, you have to be out of your comfort zone. But then you realize, like, hey, why am I uncomfortable? We have the gift, you guys, of the plant. We have the gift of propagating plants. We have the gift of practicing soil back to health. You know, they don't teach this in the universities. They don't teach this to any of the people running the governments. And now they're inviting us to the table now. So as we invite people to our table, you're going to be invited to tables because you guys are the practitioners of soil too. So I just want everyone to kind of know like where we stand now as a community and try to open up those doorways, and you'll get so much love back. People cannot wait to hear how easy it is to do something. And, you know, we have that gift with KNF. We have this thing with EM. You don't have to buy it. We can give it away. You know, mine's 22 years old. We have the tools for the sustainable future, and we have to build it now. So find a recovery place always as we move forward where you can get yourself fresh again. Some of us like to fish, but, you know, get you a recovery place because you're going to get into uncomfortable places. We're going to move it forward, you guys. It's not going to be easy, but we're going to move it forward as a cannabis community in these areas that kind of got missed. And it's going to be tough. There's going to be turbulence, but having a recovery point, you'll stay in this game, man. You won't fade out. A lot of people I've been doing this EM with a long time, they fade out, you know, but you have to have that recovery point so that it doesn't become any other mission but you yourself, you know, and saving a planet for your family, your children, other people's children, more importantly, taking them into consideration. You know, a lot of them don't have parents or uncles or aunties, you know, that's us to show them. And through the soil, you will make friends with people you thought you'd never be friends with when it comes to the soil. But you just have to let that door be open and you realize, holy shit, this is like more the team. So I appreciate you guys allowing me into your space. I hope we can keep going. I hope this was inspiration to everyone out there growing pot, and especially in your yards, and learning all the regenerative stuff and hanging on with your broken phones and unpaid bills and cars with car lights on. You know, this is for you guys. Hang in there. Hang in there, because this is, we're in the trenches and we're the front lines. So get your helmet on, put your chin strap on, and let's get some work done.
Good word.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we appreciate your time. Like I said, and it's always funny. I know you're from Cali. When you say Two Buck Chuck, you don't even have to say you're from Cali. You just mention that shit. Right. And I know immediately where you're probably more about in Cali as well. So, hey, real quick, I actually have fun with that, with the Two Buck Chuck. Is OG mean, that's your mentor? Or in Cali, OG meant it was ocean grown, baby. This is the Cali bud.
Nah, that's what they call the old gangsters, doc. The old fucking dudes that made it through coming out the pen. Like, they had the knowledge. They didn't die. They didn't get killed. You know, that's the one where we were like, it's funny because we always had some mentor. Even when we were doing the wrong, I always felt like I had a mentor that still was like trying to be like, hey, V, what about this other side? Hey, V. You know, it wasn't just, you have people that can suck you right into the dark, but then there's these other kind of OGs that kind of like pose a question to you like, why are you still doing that? You know, like, you can't see where you're going to end up. So to us, there was only a few got to wear that title. But when we knew the OGs, man, mad respect for them. You know, they were like the mayor of the town and shit, because they looked out for the kids. They looked out for everybody. And but they had like this knowledge because they made it out of the neighborhoods where we all come from. You know, our neighborhoods, you didn't go to college. You went to jail or you were dead. Two places. There's no other options. So having people pose questions to you, and that's why I was telling you, like, these mentorship programs that we do now, and showing them like, hey, check out the woods. You know, nobody ever comes to the woods. They can go maybe go drink and smoke or something, but to check it out on the level and be like, hey, this pier can help your grandma's ulcer. You know, then they start catching on to shit. But it all goes back to that, man. Yeah.
So our boy Kevin, he's got to wrap it up where he's at. So we wanted to throw it over to him. If you have a minute, V, you know, stick around, sir. Otherwise, Kevin, I know you got a bunch of stuff that you've been working on for months and months, I would imagine, that's coming up.
Yeah.
A mushroom talk and a on your property talk.
That's right. So this coming weekend, I've got the Mushroom Fest in Oklahoma City. It's the second annual Mushroom Fest. It's going to be huge at the Oklahoma City Fairgrounds. I've got all kinds of products that I'm taking up there. I'll be doing some demonstrations, and I'll be doing a talk on how to make your own soils just from the stuff around you that you can find. So that's going to be a good time for me. And then the next weekend, I'll have my GrowCast OK Calyx collab with the Autumn Immersive. We have two tickets left. That's 30 tickets total. I've got two tickets remaining. You can go to growcastpodcast.com to find all the information. It's going to be an all-day event. I'm going to take you out in the woods, show you how to gather things, how to process it, how to take it home and use it. You're going to learn all kinds of inputs, bokashi being one of them, how to ferment things. So go to growcastpodcast.com, buy those last two tickets. It's going to be a fantastic time, full of knowledge, full of encouragement, talking about your mental health and how you see nature. And just like you hear it, just like you hear Quadamon talking about, man, there's a mental health side to growing organically. There's a side that you connect in spiritually speaking. And I love this talk. I don't think it's foo-foo one single bit. I think that all of us that have experienced some type of spiritual healing and got into organic farming, we continue to feel that. And we have become better people because of it. And that empirical evidence alone is enough to let me know, yeah, guys change. I've seen guys change, and I'm one of them with this organic farming and the spiritual side that you constantly talk about. Quadamock, and I appreciate you always bringing that up in your talks. So, guys, I want you to go listen to Shangalosa's podcast, Shaping with Fire, and you're going to hear Quadamock talk about how plants and energies can actually attract lightning so that you can have more carbon down in the soil. It's freaking unbelievable what you guys have not heard him talk about. Let this be the beginning of your rabbit hole, guys. Thank you for being on here, man. I appreciate you a whole lot. I hope we can do this again. I think everybody wants to have a part two, man. Thank you, Quadamock.
I appreciate you guys so much, man. Keep doing the good work. And let me know how I can keep inspiring and keep learning from you guys. I'm going to look at some things that I learned here today. So I appreciate you.
Oh, yeah.
Mark, keep fishing, buddy. Handle it.
Hell yeah. Yeah, we were talking about fishing earlier because I used to guide fishing up in Alaska for salmon mainly and trout. And, you know, I've always been a kind of like a purpose connection driven person. So having such a deep connection in remote Alaska, being removed from that and trying to find myself again, this was 15 years ago. And it didn't really come back. That feeling never came back until I got back into the garden, until I was given an opportunity to have a garden again by way of having a house, and just getting the next level. So hearing you talk about the microbes potentially steering the salmon, whether it's the microbes or the minerals steering the salmon. Salmon are amazing creature. They're born in a tributary or stream, Pacific salmon specifically. They travel the world. They go on anywhere from a 2 to 5 year world trip all around all the oceans of the world. And then they're able to somehow come back. This is a wild run of salmon. They're able to come back to the same exact tributary or river that they were born in. And the only thing that can be come up with is whether it's the minerals or the microbes. And to me, it's the microbes. And to me, that's where the connection always was in the soil. So I'm so fortunate and so grateful to be working and selling a product that has to do with insects and soil and microbes, and working with a community like the cannabis community and the agricultural community, and now the reptile community that shares that same connection in the soil is really amazing. And your definition of OG, you are an OG to me, man, because since I've been listening to you, I've had a connection with you just because what you say sings to me, and it brings me a better understanding of myself. So that to me is you really are an OG, and I can't thank you enough for all that. And hopefully we can do a part two for sure. MIBeneficials.com is how you can support me. And I saw a website at the bottom of your screen, Quadamock. What was that? GroundCulturePDX.com. Do you have products for sale on there?
Yeah, we got some things on there.
Great. Please support. Let's support each other, guys. And I can't wait to go check out what you have to offer. The other thing that I heard through the grapevine, and I don't know if this was dated or not, but I heard that you might be working on a book. Is that true?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Any timeline, any movement?
I hope in about a year. I'm about to do the crowdfunding on that one, get pre-sale on a book. Matt Powers is my inspiration for it. I've worked with him so long. He's been trying to get me to do books forever, but I just felt like I was in the trenches so long in all these different fields. You have to kind of slow down to do that, you know? So now I got the baby. So now I got my little slowdown part here. So
yeah, slow down.
Yeah, this is my winter project now. And I feel like doing the biochar emissions testing with the Forest Service in the field and then also in the lab, really going to put an indigenous perspective on biochar and agency and that whole integration from my level and do it a little bit different with the microbials, of course, added in there. So it'll be a collection of just what I've been doing over the past few years, but a little teaser of it.
Last question for me, and then we'll turn it over to Brian. If someone has a question that they're not finding the answer to on all the resources and stuff, is there a good way to get you? Obviously, Instagram at Bokashi for you. Is that the best way to get you? Just shoot you a DM there?
Yeah, that works. Through the my webpage there too, Ground Culture, we have contact information. But I also listed on that page a ton of papers on there pertaining to Bokashi and EM, because we do work with a lot of agencies trying to get some Superfund sites to start using the EM Bokashi. So we put a information together so they could just come and look and get the information, you know, the way they know it, and then they can ask questions on it. So you can find a lot of cool things maybe didn't know existed on EM on that page as well. And then all the videos as well. Every video that we've ever done, kids on how to make stuff. Even some of the Zoom classes, I think, are on there. So we try to share as much as possible.
Yeah, for those that are kind of more getting into the niche and the world that I've gone down in the bioactive setups with the biochar, with the stuff that Quatamoc's been talking about today and on a variety of other podcasts like we had mentioned, these are some of those super secrets that I have kind of. Even though we like to share a lot of this kind of stuff, there's still so much. And a lot of this stuff is still kind of kept to the best because I don't think enough people would understand it. If I'm really being honest, I think some of the scientific world would just kind of dismiss some of this stuff, which we've always faced. You know, I've always kind of faced that. I've really been into theology. You know, people always kind of dismiss that. The quantum world I got into as well. And then when it's coming to like quantum biology and all of this, it makes a lot of sense to me, man, on why we're just sitting here floating into space. There's just so much more to learn from just the soil that I think that we forget to look down. Even though, like, a lot, you know, this famous saying, a lot of human beings forget to look up, I think that's even more predominant in our world, that we forget to look down and be grateful for food and where our food comes from and the nutrients, like you kind of brushed on. I noticed that, and there's a lot of people that are suffering with stomach problems, gluten problems, that in my opinion is coming from the glyphosates and the big corporations that are using all of these dyes that just destroy the microbes in your gut. And so how do you improve on that? And I think this is the rabbit hole that I think a lot of human beings want to go down. So even privately, if you don't even want to share this kind of stuff, these are the microbes is what's going to help you with whatever you got going on. And there's something to that. I've lived through that. That's why my kids have kefir every day. I don't ever want them to go through that. And God forbid the other stuff. We've had guests on the Future Cannabis Project that have like IBS and things that are just, that's mind-boggling to me how someone would be able to deal with those kind of stuff. So blackberries and kefir and listening to Quatamuc, you're going to be going down a rabbit hole and you're going to start feeling a lot better. Anything else? This weekend we're going down into into Colorado Springs for the Show Me shows. We're going to be hanging out, selling our isopods. You'll notice probably after this podcast The biochar that I have in all of my pre-made systems that people have been asking for. So just come down and support us at the reptile shows. We're really appreciative of everything, the online sales, everything that you guys do to support us and everybody that's a part of the show. We notice it each and every week. And if you don't think one or two orders a week from the audience isn't noticed, it is noticed. So we just appreciate that. And we look forward to the caliber of guests that Mark has put together, honestly, without even kind of like just put this together on his own, is a salute and a half, man, because Quatamuck, Chris Trump, Matt Powers, I mean, these are big, big names. And I know right now our audience might not even know who that is, but I promise you, if you're really wanting to get into this and, let's face it, monetize these skill sets, then these are the guys with the fucking playbooks, baby. And Mark was able to get them on the show. So just appreciate it, man. And this is something that gets me excited because I was in the trenches, man. I wasn't able to find – this is during COVID. I wasn't able to find money anymore because I was trying to be a cannabis consultant and traveling. And so when that all got shut down, it's back to the basics, I think. And that's what you were talking about today in a very like level two, level three way. So a lot of you that might not even understand some of the jargon that we were talking about towards, basically the jargon, you got to go back and kind of understand that stuff. So again, Mark, man, anything else to you, brother? Again, you're putting these behind the scenes. There is so much work to that that I don't think our audience knows that. I just wanted to highlight that for you.
I just want to say that the guys like Chris Trump, Quatamuck, Matt Powers, all I did was send a DM and ask, and these guys are the guys that have the burning passion to share this mission. So, you know, these are the guy. It's so amazing to even get a response, because from listening to guys like Quatamuck and Matt and Chris for so long and learning a lot of these basics, not basics now, but, you know, initially from these guys, and being able to talk one-on-one is amazing. So if you guys do love the show and support the mission, because this is a free show, you can support the show, you can support our guests by supporting our businesses, and hitting that subscribe button, hitting the like button, sharing as much as you can, and helping us spread the good word on regenerative ag. I think it's a wholesome and amazing mission that we're on here, guys. So until next week, everybody. Keep that cycle rolling. Keep it regenerative.